Coming up on Voice of Youth,
where every week we take a different term of teen slang,
on and poppy,
WTF,
bread,
my bed,
and define it only as youth can.
This week,
crib,
slang for the place you call home,
your shelter.
But
what happens when a shelter becomes a prison?
This question is just one of many in tonight's audio dictionary entry.
Strap yourself in, because you're going to be touring the broadest range of cribs we could think of.
For example, one youth tells us about moving to a crib in a new neighborhood.
We brought all our chaos to a neighborhood suffering from immense silence, and they were taken aback by our noise.
Then, one of our correspondents goes on the road with a local realtor to hear about the challenges of buying a house.
Well, what if my house gets shot up, you know? Like, what the hell?
And then, our hosts get in the studio with a young man who just came back from prison and ask what it was like to call prison home.
Please have the keys to your room.
All that and much, much more.
As our hosts give you an earful of sagas and situations,
questions and comments,
all about the word crib.
Hosts,
three,
two,
one,
take it away.
I'm in control. I felt it like a click. Looking around my room, my door now locked behind me. This one time, I was about 8. I was with a good friend of mine. A good friend, even though we would fight all the time. We would also be over at each other's houses all the time. This one time, I remember we were at my house and we were fighting. I was so angry. It didn't matter who had done the other wrong, but it was probably me. I ran into my room, slammed my door, and locked it. She kept pounding on it and writing me notes under the door saying, like, please come out. But I didn't care. It felt like I was in there for hours, but it was probably just 10 minutes. But those 10 minutes gave me the time to calm down, be alone. I felt like the world couldn't touch me. Since that time, I always lock myself in at my crib. It's a habit. I don't understand exactly why. But it gives me my privacy, a place to rest, a place to lock myself into, away from the entire world, or to lock out menacing energy. All those crazy people, the deranged people you hear about, serial killers, the people would kill or hurt for no reason, the people who might be trying to hurt me, trying to physically lock them out of my room. But then sometimes, I even think that they would try and break my window. A lock on a window never really stops anyone. And my bed's under my window, and I wonder if I should move that. I think I'm going to change how my room is laid out soon, or put bars on my window. I'm host Amanda Wells. Today, on our show, the word crib, a word for the world you lock yourself into.
It wasn't where I left it. This feeling came over me like a flash. I looked around my room at where I had left my Lola doll and looked at the room my brother shared where they were playing with my doll. You remember when Space Jam was out? They were selling these stuffed animals of the movie's characters at Burger King. Well, me and my brothers, we had to have every doll. We had Bugs Bunny, the Tasmanian Devil, Daffy Duck, there was the ugly looking colorful monsters, and there was Lola. She was my doll. And now, I was looking with anger at Lola, not where I'd left her. Instead, she was just there, like the girlfriend or something, while Terrell as Daffy Duck battled Tori as Bugs Bunny. Maybe they were fighting over her. It was a new feeling, that surprise, that feeling like, I better be more aware now. Since that time, I have to lock other people out at my crib. There's one lock I've had for a while, a lock with a latch I've attached to all my bedroom doors in the houses I've lived in lately. I put a padlock on the outside of my door, and I never saw it as something to explain until just recently. Maybe it's because living in shelters, having a lock on your door was like a sign that what you had was of value. A lock on your locker meant, I have something so nice, you might want it. I don't know. I just want my stuff to be nice. I know people aren't going to be as careful with my things as I would be. I can't trust they could possibly value it as much as I do. I wouldn't care if they took it. I just need to tell them first how to take care of it. So you always have to check. Is this something I should be leaving out or no? And then when you get home, you have to check and see if it's there or not. As far as just trusting people, it's too late for that for me. I've seen with time that however much you try to tell a person, they're gonna do what they wanna do. There's too many realities of that not working for me. If they wanna change, they'll change. Meanwhile, stay alert. I'm host, LaQuaya Simmons. Today on our show, Crib, A word for a world you lock people out of.
I'm free.
I felt it like a weight lifted off my shoulders. I didn't have to worry about getting in trouble if I stepped outside my door. For 4 months, I had lived with a house arrest anklet around my ankle. You can't go in the front of your house. You can't have friends over. You have to call before you leave your house and call when you get back. You're not supposed to take a bath, but you can take a shower. You can't take a bath because the band of your anklet has an electric current and it could shock you. To get the anklet on, they strapped it on, they locked it in, and then they tightened it just a little bit. Since that time, I have been locked into staying at my crib every day for almost 4 months. Until that day, standing in front of my house, it felt like I was free after being locked up in a little box for like a year. There were birds chirping and it was a clear sky, and it was windy and it smelled like freedom. So I started running down the street. It felt so good to be able to walk away from my house and not get in trouble. I ran all the way down the street to the end. It felt so good. Then I ran back to my crib, put on some more fly clothes. I said to my mom, "I'm leaving." And she said, "Don't leave," but I left anyway. See, now I can't stand my house. It still feels like a cell. I hope I won't ever be on house arrest again. Actually, I know I won't, because the next time, I'll be locked up for sure, till I'm 18 or longer. It's not like I'm trying to go back to the hall, but it seems like a place I keep coming back to. I'm host Gabe Mort. Today, on our show, the word crib. A word for the place you lock yourself into. The place you lock people out of, but more than anything, the place you keep coming back to.
I'm host Amanda Wells, 17, senior at Maria Carrillo High School in beautiful Santa Rosa, California, here with fellow host
LaCoya Simmons, 20 years old, college student, soaking up a lot of knowledge while working a job and plus the gig here at Voice of Youth. It's all a little hectic, but enough about me. I'd like to formally introduce our guest host for today. Step up to the mic, young man, and introduce yourself.
I'm Gabe Moore, 16, junior at New Direction School.
I have a question to get the ball rolling. If I say the word crib, what immediately comes to mind?
A house where you live.
Place where you party sometimes? I don't know.
That one show, MTV Cribs?
Oh, yeah.
How about the question, who uses the word crib? How do they generally mean it? Can you guys give me any situations where you've heard it used?
Yeah, like one time I was on the phone with my boy. He's like, "Hey, you want to come over to my crib and party?" I was like, "Yeah, for sure. What time?" He's like, "Be at my crib at like 10 p.m.
What about you, Amanda?
Well, none of my friends use it, and I definitely don't use the word. But sometimes, like, one of my friends will say it like, "Why don't we go to my crib?" or something. And they're not really being serious about it. It's kind of an ironic way because we both know that neither of us would ever use it. So it's kind of just using it to be funny or whatever.
Yeah. So I heard you say that you don't really use the word crib for, you know, your house or place that you live, Amanda. What other words do you use that might mean the same thing?
Basically just like house or like place. I use place a lot. Like, let's go over to your place.
Yeah. I usually say pad. I say spot too.
Yeah.
I say let's go to my spot. If someone uses the word crib instead of home, what does that tell you about the person or place they're talking about?
I think if a person uses crib, especially in that situation, I think that they're saying that it's really like their house or it's their place. Like, I don't think someone who's renting like a room out of like a family situation would really call it like their crib, because it's more the other person's and theirs or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Or when my boys say crib, usually it's when their parents are gone and they have control of the house, so it's like almost their crib for like a certain amount of time. Or sometimes, like, when they say crib, like they mean their room, you know? It just go to their room and chill.
I think people, like for me, people use the word home or, like, house when it's a place that they don't really want to be. Because, like, some people will be like, "Man, I got to go home." You know what I mean? And it's like they don't really want to, that's the place that they don't really want to be.
Yeah. I think crib is used especially when you're, like, proud of it. Like, when you're proud that you have it. And
yeah.
So who do you think would be the last person to use the word crib, and why?
Pretty much everyone I know, they use that word.
Which is weird because almost none of the people that I know use it at all. I think there's a definite line like between communities. Like the people in my community and like Eastside, Santa Rosa, Maria Carrillo people don't really use the word crib.
So where did this word even come from? How did it come to have all these meanings in this day and age? I hear you found some information for us, Gabe.
Here is the short and kind of confusing history of the word crib. It all started way back when. An old English word spelled C-R-I-B-B meant a wooden box, like a manger. Then apparently it became a word thieves used in the 1800s for a lodging house. I guess like a motel. You know how there's those motels on Santa Rosa Avenue? And speaking of which, there's reports that crib used to mean a whorehouse, or at least a prostitute's room. Like, a prostitute might say, "You want to come to my crib?" But then, we talked to a few people who used to be in the jazz scene in the 50s, and they said that crib was popular as a word like, "Hey, after our gig, let's go to my crib."
Then, of course, there's some random meanings like in the game cribbage. I guess it means cards a player gives away to the dealer. And then finally, there's crib like crib notes, something you cheat off of.
And of course, there's just the regular baby crib definition. It's interesting that with babies, it's for when you aren't strong or smart enough to be in a regular bed. Like, you're kind of locked in for your own protection.
Yeah, it definitely seems like being in a crib is like being protected. But I guess the question is, who is being protected from what?
For a lot of people, the dream of having their own crib, like literally owning a house, is the dream of being safe from having to move.
We wanted to know more about the reality of this dream of house ownership. So director Tatiana Harrison got together with Crystal, 16 years old. We'll just call her Crystal because there's some sensitive topics in the story.
So together, Crystal and Tatiana created an imaginary scenario.
In this scenario, it's about 6 years in the future, and Crystal, who's been in and out of juvenile hall and has gotten expelled from all district schools, has cleaned up her act enough to get married to her current boyfriend and buy a house. Century 21 agent Carol Collins agreed to play the role of Crystal's realtor and take her around to see houses.
Something important to know is that the area, southwest Santa Rosa, especially near LCL and high school, is widely considered Sereno gang territory. Crystal will be seen by Serenos as an enemy, as she's seen to associate with the rival gang Norteños. But they also visit a neighborhood, South Park, which is considered Norteño territory.
Well, without further ado, here's the story we'll call Crystal 2012.
Today, I guess we're gonna go look at some houses. It's in South Santa Rosa.
You're looking for a house, but it's you in 6 years. Okay. Like, it's the future you.
First off, I wouldn't want to live in South Santa Rosa, even in 6 years, you know?
You think so?
Yeah, I know so. I just wouldn't want to live there.
You don't think ever your opinions about the world will change enough that you might want to live there?
Maybe if they have nicer houses,
It's about the house or the people?
Okay, the people. Because you're going to have to deal with them, you know? Like, you're going to have, you know, they're your neighbors. I mean, you know, what if my house gets shot up, you know? Like, what the hell? I mean, one day I'd like to walk around down the street and see some guy wearing blue and be like, oh, that's just a normal person, you know? Whatever. But still, I can't do that. Now I can't do that. I don't know if in the future I could do that.
It's 6 years, about, yeah.
6 years, okay. So now everything's fine, and is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, so describe to me your fantasy situation there.
Okay, well, me cruising around, you know, and I'm still with my boyfriend, you know. I get along with my family. Everything's great.
And what are you doing as a job?
Cosmetologist. I don't know, doing all that hair stuff and nails and all that kind of stuff. My boyfriend's like a electrician, yeah, that's what he wants to do. So he's gonna start doing that once he gets out. He's in juvenile hall, but he's coming out next month.
What is it about owning a house, like having your own crib, that's important?
I mean, that's what I want. I don't want to be renting all the time, you know? I want to get a house for sure, you know? It's your house, you know, you can do whatever with it. You can paint your house whatever color you want, you know.
If you got a crib, what would you put in it?
Nice red couches. Black couches. And then I'd paint the walls red, the whole living room, the whole place red. And the couches would be black, the table, the chairs, everything. Red and black, everything. Every single thing.
Oh, I think that's her. Hi. I can present to you.
Yeah.
Crystal, nice to meet you.
Now,
Crystal?
Just Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Crystal.
You're going to be our home buyer,
yes.
Right?
Yes. So we should jump in here?
Yeah, jump in there.
Okay.
My name is Carol Collins, and I am an agent with Century 21 Alliance Real Estate in Santa Rosa. I've been in this business 19 years, and today I am taking Crystal out to look at a variety of properties in the $300,000 range. Well, Crystal and Misa, they are trying to buy their first property. They're young, newly married. Misa has a very good job, and he makes about $30,000 a year and has been working with this company for about 4 years. Crystal makes about $20,000 a year and has been working with her company about 2 years. The length of employment is very important. Lenders look at that. The second thing they look at is your credit report. And Misa, unfortunately, has been a very bad boy.
In many ways.
And he has run up cell phone bills and credit card bills, and he hasn't paid them. So his credit is going to result in some problems with the loan. One of those main problems is that you will pay a higher interest rate because his credit is so bad. All right, the other thing is that Misa and Crystal have decided that they're not going to have children, even though they want to have them, until they can buy a house. And her parents and his parents are not going to be able to help them financially. They might be able to come up with a couple of $1,000s, but that's about it. The kids are going to have to do it on their own. That's the scenario.
Okay, tell us where we are.
Right now we're here at West Avenue. I know a lot of people down here. There's been a lot of drive-bys around here, so I don't feel that safe. I don't really like the house. It looks moldy and ugly, and we're walking through the back, and we're going to open the lockbox.
And now I point this at the box.
So now we're walking in. And is this the living room?
This is the living room.
Okay.
Now, let me tell you about this house. It is listed for $375,000. Built in 1954, so it's 52 years old.
Too old.
I want you to jump up and down on this. This house is probably built out of redwood. If they have an earthquake here, I would rather be in this house than in a new one. That's not sheetrock. That's lath and plaster.
Wow.
Okay, but there are some problems with this house.
Okay.
Look at these windows.
Yeah, that's what I was noticing.
You've got not only mold, but you've got rot. What you would need to do is take this whole thing out.
Yeah, that's what, it
and
seems
And this
like.
Is where you find out who Mish knows, who's in construction. If he wants to be an electrician, he knows people. Mm-hmm. And you go buy 3 cases of beer, mm-hmm. and you invite them to your house, and you fix it.
Oh, it has a big backyard.
Yeah, it does.
You can fix it. I'll bring my dad to fix it.
This is the kind of house that you would want to come in with a real low, hard and fast offer. And what you would basically do is we would write the offer and you would send me in to say, take it or leave it.
Okay.
So you walked in and you hated it, but now you're beginning to see some of the things about it.
Yeah.
That's what our job is today, is to figure out where I put the key.
Okay, that was house number one. Your thoughts, Crystal?
My thoughts? Well, first I thought it was ugly from the outside, you know, but we can, fix it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel weird here.
So now we are going to South Park. Do you feel a little better, Crystal?
The other house was 3 bedrooms, 1 bath. This one is 2 bedrooms, 1 bath. And since the owner's here, we won't talk as much about this as we did the last one, okay? Let's just take a look around.
Okay.
This kitchen has obviously been remodeled. This property has been on the market 82 days, 3 months. Right now, it's normal because houses aren't selling. Back a year ago, they'd be on the market like 8 hours. Yes, the other house had another bedroom, mm-hmm. and it had about 200 square feet more. Okay, that house could look like this house. Mm-hmm. The question is, would it take you $20,000 to do it? Because that's the difference in the price of these. One of the things that you want to watch for in a neighborhood is look at the cars. They will tell you a great deal about who lives here.
Yeah.
House number two, what's the verdict?
I like it. I like it better than the other one, but, you know.
Safer.
Safer.
Yeah. ESP.
Rochester Park.
What?
Oh, right. No, there was just graffiti.
Oh.
But what are some things that you think would be hard to not, like, want to buy in the next 6 years? Well, what about cars? Because you're going to want to buy a nice car, aren't you?
Hell yeah, a Cadillac.
Okay. So can you, Carol, buy a Cadillac and also probably afford this house?
No.
Crystal's face.
Really?
There's no way.
Not with the income that we're projecting for the two of you. If you buy a house, we are going to be taking close to 60% of your monthly income, $3,500. Crystal, I think our next step is going to be to get you and your husband to sit down with a lender.
Okay.
And just see what we're going to be able to do and find out realistically what kind of payments you guys are going to be able to make and payments that you're going to be comfortable with. Is that okay?
Yes, sounds good. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, there you go. Okay. You're back at home. Crystal, thank you so
thank
much.
You very
My
much.
Best to your husband.
Oh, thank you.
I will look forward to seeing him the next time.
Okay.
And
thank
I'll
you
call
very
you
much.
And set you up with the lender.
Okay.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
So maybe just say, like, what's going on, like, that we're on our way home.
Well, now we're on our way home. I just saw a whole bunch of houses with that lady. What's her name?
Carol Collins.
Carol Collins.
Must seem pretty far away, the idea of having your own house.
Yes, yes, so far away. But I'm looking for a job, and I'm going to get a job soon, I know it.
I feel like there was a major moment of change when you realized you could not have the Cadillac in the house.
Yes, I want my Cadillac. That's like my dream.
Why do you think the Cadillac is almost more important than the house?
Because that's something you drive around nowadays, you feel me? People see you in it. People look at you, notice you more when they see that little flashy car with the rims. You know, nice system, good music going.
Does that seem more important right now than a house?
No. Well, I mean, I don't know. That's something I always wanted, you know, a nice car.
But the blingy now basically means that you won't have the stability in the future, right? Because you'd have to, like, that money would go towards the blingy now as opposed to saving for the future.
I think it's better when I take it day by day because I'm the kind of person that would flip out. Like,
you mean if you think about the future,
yeah,
if you have to, like, actually plan?
Yeah, exactly. I'd go crazy. I'd really go crazy because buying a house is a lot of sacrifices, you know? Like, by then, like, I'll be, like, 21, 22. I still want to go clubbing. I still want to go drink. I still want to go have fun with my man. With the friends and everything, so.
So the conclusion is kind of like, you probably wouldn't buy a house at that time, but maybe when you're, say, 30 or something.
Exactly. 30 years old sounds better.
But you still are gonna have to kind of choose a priority, like whether it's kind of like the blinging now or having stability later, huh?
Well, that's why I have fun now and then worry about it later.
And it go a little something like this.
Little Lisa's only 9 years old. She's trying to figure out why the world is so cold. Why she's all alone and they never met her family. Mama's always gone and she never met her daddy. Part of her is missing and nobody'll listen. Mama's on drugs, getting high up in the kitchen. Bringing home in at different hours of the night. Starting with some laughs, usually ending in a fight. Sneaking in a room when her mama's knocked out. Trying to have his way and little Lisa says, ouch. She tries to resist, but then all he does is beat her. Tries to tell her mom, but her mama don't believe her. Lisa stuck up in the world on her own. Forced to think that hell is a place called home. Nothing else to do but get some clothes and pack. She says she's about to run away and never come back.
That was 16-year-old Crystal and Voice of Youth director Tatiana getting a reality check on how it is to buy a crib. I'm host Gabe Mort with Amanda Wales and LaKoya Simmons breaking down the word crib.
Is owning a house a dream for you guys? Why and why not?
Yeah, I think I wish I owned a house. That'd be pretty real. But then, see, owning a house comes with, like, hella responsibilities if you like own that house. Like you have to pay like taxes, and it depends on like the amount of land you own. You have to pay like more taxes for that land and crap like that. You have to keep your house up.
I think owning property and having like your own piece of land in a country is almost like, I guess what a lot of people call it, you know, like an investment. Like you now care about the like economic status of your country because you have a piece of it. And because of that, you know, it's yours. You want the real estate market to go up. You want to live in like a nice place so that it'll have more value. So basically you can get more money. It seems like a theme of the story is why people can't get ahead. Like that they can't give up having fancy things or fun in the present for a future goal that might make them feel more secure, but is just so far off that they can't deal with thinking about it. How does thinking about the future make you feel?
I don't think about the future. I don't have long-term goals because, you know, if you fail that goal, you just be like, oh, I've worked so hard on this goal and I just screwed everything I worked up towards. You know what I'm saying? So I don't have to like have a long-term goal and then have it all crash down and just be all depressed and crap.
So you don't like thinking about the future?
Yeah, no, I don't think about the future.
Yeah, I would just say that I'm like completely a dreamer in that sense, because I'm always thinking about like way, way in the future when I've got my perfect job or whatever, because I know what I want to do. I want to go into international relations and go visit other countries and things like that. But then also I step back and I'm like, okay, how would I do that? So it's like, go to college, you know, take these foreign whatever exams to get into that, and then work your way up there. But I don't know.
I think it's also like what you're dreaming for, yeah. I think. Because like for me, I still to this day dream about being like on stage at the Grammys or something like that. Mm-hmm. And like hella famous people in the crowd just listening to me sing and stuff, and like just in my little like dress and looking hella beautiful and stuff, you know, like I still dream about that like every day, but I don't dream like about my dream house every day.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I guess it's like certain stuff. Like I dream about like a romantic relationship like almost every day, you know. I dream about the future for that, but I guess like certain things I don't really dream for, I guess. Well, let me say that we wish Crystal and Misa good luck on their first leg of the journey when Misa gets out of juvenile hall in about 40 days.
And now, we've got two little stories on deck that'll get you inside the crib of some of us kids.
Ashley Bolden and Jamie Moore were both 17 when they wrote these stories about the inner world of their cribs and its relationship to the outside world.
Roll that tape.
Around my place, you'll find chaos. It sometimes gets so tiring to be around. Always someone to bug you. Few moments of peace. Yet there are hardly moments of loneliness either. Around my place, there is always some kind of mess. Messes in rooms, from the kitchen to the garage. People just get tired of cleaning them up. Dishes are done, only to be dirtied again by a second round of dinner. Rooms stay clean, only until the little kids get home. We brought all our chaos to a neighborhood suffering from immense silence, and they were taken aback by our noise. Around my place, there's respect among neighbors. Nobody purposely bothers another or mows their lawn at a crazy hour. Kids play with each other, sometimes in the street, and the cars drive slow. At first this was weird, since we're used to loud noises and disrespect. But with time, neighborly smiles and hellos have become more of a commonplace. Before we moved, the inside of our house matched the outside. That's not how it is here. People always go house to house a certain time of the month, soliciting one product or another. And the Hispanic guy on the bike comes around each week on garbage day, digging through the recycle bins of my neighborhood. The dog of the house behind ours always plays with its squeaky toy in the middle of the night, and my mother wakes up to the sound of the neighbor's alarm. My brother always plays outside and manages to throw a ball over the fence every time. Around my place, you'll find many houses that look uniform at first glance, but take a closer look. Behind those doors hold different things. That was a peek behind mine.
I wake up to the loud cussing of my dad and my stepmom in the next room, though it's not really a surprise since it happens every day that he's home. As I lie in bed, I wonder, Is it that hard to be so respectful in a house you don't even own? On my alarm clock, big red numbers say 7 o'clock. I decide to get up. It's Saturday, October 29th. No school, free time to do whatever. It's like, these should be my peaceful days, right? Wrong. As I go into the kitchen, I approach my grandma, who's always waking up way too early. I don't know how she does it. I sit with her, talk as she drinks coffee. We talk about the newspaper and gossip about what my dad's been doing since he's been out. We wonder what kind of trouble he's getting himself into now. We hear the door slam and the loud footsteps coming towards the kitchen, so we know that my dad is up. The mornings in my house run by pretty smoothly. By 10, everyone has showered, and the noisy people, my dad and my stepmom, have left. The sun is up, and I go lay in the backyard in this lounge chair that we have that folds out. When I'm there, I always remember my grandfather and how, when I was little, he would lie there and hold me. I was lying in the chair relaxed until the neighbors next door began to blast their Mexican music super loud. I try to ignore the music, but with that and the casino construction down the street, I give up and go back in my house. Inside, I pretend it's quiet, but really, those are the daily sounds of my neighborhood. And all through the day, I hear them, until I finally go to sleep, listening to my friend talk to me on the phone. Since I can only fall asleep when I hear someone talking to me on the phone. The next day, I wake up, and this time the clock says 9:30. I wonder, why did I sleep so late? This hardly happens. I go into the kitchen, and I find my grandmother sitting at the table as usual. Too tired to go on, I just stand there, watching her, drinking coffee, reading the newspaper. I sit down by her, she smiles, says good morning, and we sit. She doesn't really say anything, because she knows how upset I'll get. But in my head, I knew what happened, and my house goes back to the quietness that I had quickly forgotten.
Hey, Lucas, what are we listening to?
Well, Marina, we're listening to Voice of Youth, The Crib Show.
You are indeed listening to Voice of Youth, The Crib Show. Here in the studio, I'm LaKoya Simmons, hosting along with Amanda and Gabe in his debut as host.
And let me just say, even though it seems like part of the definition of the word crib is a place that keeps out the rest of the world, we actually heard in those stories, especially Ashley's, the second story, that a crib can never do that fully.
Also, Jamie's story, the first one, especially showed that you might think you know what's going on in a crib, but you don't really. A crib can be used to lock in a lot of secrets.
Some people think a crib is the place you're raised, but in Jamie's story, she talked about having just moved. So how does a place you've just moved to feel different from an old place, or if you're moving around a lot?
Like for me, always moving around, I always had to know, like, to not get comfortable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, like, I always knew that I was moving. So, I don't know. I don't know about something different, but that might be something that was the same for me at, like, a lot of places. It's just, like, not being able to get comfortable because I just always know in the back of my head that I'm not going to be here long.
Yeah. Like, for me, when I was young, like, I was moving around a lot because, like, I was in group homes from when I was 9 to, like, 14. So, like, every once in a while, like, I'd move from group home to group home, and then, like, I'd run away from that group home, and, like, I'd run away and go stay somewhere else. And so I could never stay at one place for too long, you know what I'm saying? So I was always moving around until, like, I got caught, and I just got back to that group home.
Yeah, for me, I had, like, one house for a really long time. So I got kind of comfortable in there, but then we moved to, like, my new house now. So almost like I still like miss my old house and I'm still like, oh, like I wish you're back there. But then like I've changed so much and so moving to this new house is kind of like me changing. But even before that, like when my mom and me and my brothers like moved here, like to Sonoma County, we were in a shelter at first. So that's definitely like not a crib at all or a home or anything. Because you know, like, you don't want to be there and you, like, don't want that to be your home, so.
I think it's like you make things your home until you actually, like, get there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of feel bad for, like, homeless people. Like, that being, like, your life all the time.
you know what I'm saying? And just being on the streets, being hella cold. Most of the people, like, living under bridges, you know what I'm saying? Like, Santa Rosa, you know, Satan's yeah. Tunnels and stuff like that. Like, actually, there's whole societies be living under there, like, 40 people. Like, I remember one time I was, like, at the creek, and I was looking down. There was, like, at least 40 people sleeping down there, you know what I'm saying? Like, little fires going on and stuff. And there was a tree covering their thing so no one could see in. I mean, it's crazy. And, like, there's hella blankets and stuff like that. So it's almost like a little camp.
Like a little community.
Yeah, like a little community.
Speaking of unusual living situations, well, remember how Ashley's dad was in and out of her life when he wasn't there? He was in prison. Prison could be called a crib if you're just going with a superficial definition of just where you live.
And we wondered, is prison really a person's crib, using a deeper definition of the word? What's the perspective of the roughly 2 million people in this country behind bars?
To find out, we invited Justin Ebert, 22 years old, into the studio. Justin is, well, let's just say, someone I've known for a while. And he's been incarcerated the majority of the time I've known him.
We did an interview earlier this week with Justin, who was released from Susanville State Prison 1 month ago.
Let's take a listen to an excerpt from our interview.
We have a special guest in the studio. You want to introduce yourself?
Man, my name's Justin. I'm 22.
When was the first time you were arrested?
11 years old.
And what happened?
I don't remember. I think I was tagging under a bridge.
Did anything happen then?
What do you mean?
Like, what'd they do to you?
Who, the cops?
Yeah.
Took me to juvenile hall for a little bit. Mom came and picked me up.
So, you've been in prison, right?
Yes.
And can I ask you what you were in prison for?
Yeah. First time I was in prison, it was for an escape from CYA.
Can you describe to us what CYA is?
Yeah. CYA is California Youth Authority. It's for serious youth offenders. That's 18 and under.
And then?
And then what?
You said the first time.
Second time was for a couple violations. And my next term I caught a year ago for burglary.
So today we're defining and working on the word crib. How would you define that word?
A house.
Would you consider a cell a crib?
No.
Why?
Because I wouldn't use the word crib in the first place.
Well, then would you use, instead of crib, would you consider your cell a miniature house?
I might call it that. I don't know if I'd like consider that in my mind, like this is my house, but.
Yeah, for sure.
Cell's about 6 by 11 feet. There's a lock on it that you don't have a key to, you know. It has a bathroom in there. And that's about it. And a house is a house.
What's the greatest luxury about being in prison?
A luxury?
What would you miss the most about prison?
I don't know. You get close. Some of your homies in there. Friendship.
And what's the best thing about being outside?
Freedom.
Like what type of freedom? Say for instance, what type of freedom do you have on the outside that you don't have in prison?
Well, you can shower when you want. You can go outside when you want.
So you can't do that in there? What is it like in there?
You come out when they want to let you out. Shower. Usually get a shower in once a day. Usually have yard time once a day. Every prison has a yard. Have different buildings, different housing segments. Like in my block, there was 200 cells in it. 2 people a cell, 2 tiers. You come out for yard every day. Go to chow twice a day. I eat lunch in your cell. Can change for whatever reason they want to change it for. You kind of forget about it, but you're under correctional officers, pretty much their whim. Whenever they want you to come out, that's it. They're police. Police have the keys to your room.
So is it like you kind of have to adapt when you're there to a different type of environment than you do when you're on the outside?
Yeah, but not really. By the time you hit prison, especially a mainline yard, you go through a lot of different other stuff. You go to county jail, which you've probably already been to before. If you're going to prison, been to county jail a couple times, probably been to juvenile hall, maybe CYA. So I mean, prisons, it's better than all the other ones. Well, I mean, it's not better, but it's easier.
What is it about prison that really affects you? Like, what do you get out of it?
I mean, you can spend your time in there however you want to spend it. Your attitude will be affected by how much time you actually went with. If you go with like 6 months, a year, 2 years even, you're not really worried about it. I mean, you go with 6 months or a year, you might not even get out of reception. It's like a San Quentin, some place you first get sent when you go to prison. Then you have your mainline yards where stuff's more established. And you get more privileges. Your visiting's better. Get clothes, packages, all that. As far as like positive you can work out in there, gain weight, get healthy, especially if you're into drugs, play ball. I mean, get an education. Some of those people in there for 10, 15 years, get college degrees. It's all what you want to do with it. You can do nothing. I mean, you can learn how to tattoo. You can learn how to draw. You can do whatever you want with your time.
How do you usually spend your time?
Me? Drawing, working out.
So when you think of like prison or like jail or just being locked up or whatever, do you think of that as like a place where you live?
Define live.
Like
the place where you sleep, yeah. Place where you eat, yeah.
So like
you're alive, so you're living, but you never really live there. You're just there because you gotta be. I mean, you don't accumulate nothing. Pictures, letters. I mean, your cell gets searched whenever they want to. I mean, it's never really your house. It's never really yours.
How's it feel when you first step out of prison? If you've been there, what's the first thing you want to go do?
Probably get something to eat. You always think about that.
Yeah.
Just gonna go get to eat. Actually, you're content to do anything when you first get out. When I first got out, this last time, I did a year. And I first got out, and we just drove. It was way up there past Reno. My mom stayed overnight in Reno. It's like an hour drive away. So we just drove, and it was cool. I wasn't worried about it. I mean, not at all.
How do you ultimately envision your crib to be?
My house?
Mm-hmm.
Nah, I don't know. I just want a house. I ain't worried about it. A real house and not an apartment would be cool, but other than that, I'm not worried about it.
So mainly just a place where you can eat, sleep?
Nah.
No?
Nah, I mean, a place that looks cool, clean, garage, pool maybe. That's cool. That's enough.
But like realistically, you think that's like, that could ever happen? Or what?
Sure.
Based on what? How do you think you're ultimately going to reach your ultimate house, your crib? You feel me? Your big house with the pool and all that. The garage and stuff.
We'll have to find out, huh?
You've tuned into Voice of Youth, The Crib Show. We're getting into the final leg of our journey through all the different dimensions of the word crib. That was Justin Iba, letting us peek into the very private world of prison.
And it was really interesting to hear Justin ask, what is living? Not just being alive, but living. He suggested that personal freedom is a big part of living, being able to control your environment.
Psychologists say there is a universal human need for peaceful sanctuary, and the absence of it leads to restlessness. Gabe, you've been locked up for periods of time. So what psychological effect have you seen being locked up have on you?
When you get locked up, at first, you're scared at, like, you know, what's going to happen, you know, who's the people in there, you know, what's going to happen to you, if you're going to get beat up, if you're going to get a roommate that don't like you. Say, like, I'm in a gang and there's going to be a rival gang member in there and, you know, we're going to get in a fat fight.
So that's what comes to mind for you first?
Yeah, like, well, that's what came to mind for me the first time I went in.
You didn't think, like, about your family or, like,
no,
your friends?
No, not really, because I knew it was short term. I knew it was short term because when you go in, you only have 3 days to your court date, and the first time they usually just let you out. But more and more when I went in there, it became like I went in there more, longer, and it just became like, I don't think I'm getting out, you know? When you come out of there, you don't want to go back. But it's almost like you keep going back over and over and over again.
So why do you think you keep going back to a place that you really don't want to be?
Because it's probation. Probation is, for me, it's hard for me to follow the rules because I'm a very outgoing person. And I like doing things. I like going to parties and I like doing that stuff. And that's the stuff that gets me in trouble. You know what I'm saying? Like me going away and like leaving my house for like a week and then coming back, you know, and then.
But why do you do that when you know it's going to get you in trouble?
I don't know. I do it unconsciously. Like I just leave and then like I finally think about it when it's actually happening. You know what I'm saying? Like probation comes to my school and then they like handcuff me and take me back to jail.
Yeah. I don't know what it's like to be in jail or like imprisoned or anything like that because I've never like literally been in jail or prison or like in a cell or anything like that. Even though I'm out and I'm free, so to speak, I still feel like I am imprisoned when someone I love or care about or someone I know is in prison, even though I'm not literally in there myself. Because I'm like living in a world where I'm kind of trapped because I don't have that person to like be there for whatever reason I need them to be there for me for. So like without them to be that for me, I have to find a way to do without it. And it's kind of like in prison, you know, you don't have the people there with you or whatever. So you got to think of things to do without them or how ways to live without them.
Yeah.
Or without it, you know, I don't know if I should say this, but it's like. It's like they're dead, right? But you know they're coming back.
Yeah.
Well, if you didn't think this is depressing enough to think about, we've got one last story that will make all this look minor.
We outsourced this one, you could say. The kids at Brown Student Radio over in Providence, Rhode Island, did an incredible interview last year for a special show about Hurricane Katrina, and we've got that interview queued up to share with you now.
For the person being interviewed, Stephen Stearns, his crib became a trap and a tomb for his mom.
Let's roll that tape.
I was supposed to leave for the Army on August 31st, and the storm hit on the 29th. We were the only people, me, my mom, my dad, were the only people left in the block. We're all Catholic, raised Catholic. She said, if it's my time to go, it's my time to go. I'm not afraid of dying. She told me that to my face. She was, I'm not afraid. Went to bed Sunday night. My dad and mom pretty much stayed up the whole night. I went to bed. I think the pot went off at like 1:30. I went to sleep and I woke up. I had a box spring and a mattress and I rolled off and I just landed and the carpet was wet. And so I thought since I slept the whole night, maybe the storm was close to being over. It was just windy and a little rain. And I walked at a back patio glass door and I walked to it. And the built-in pool was over flooded and I was like, oh, all right, it's not that bad. It's something like if a water heater broke and it was just water in the house. And I walked back to my room, I put a couple of things up on a shelf, and when I walked back, it had water to my head all the way around the house. And I was kind of standing, looking in the glass door, and I kind of took a step back, and my dad threw me a life jacket, threw me one and my mom one. And in the front door, a whole frame, and it just shot off the hinges. And the water started coming up, and it had enough room where you can see. It wasn't pitch black, but a lot of stuff was floating up to the ceiling. But the water stopped, and you had enough room to go through the house and out the front door. And then my mom and dad told me to go. And as I guess they were coming behind me, but as I was going out the front door, I looked back, and then the water just started coming up right as I was going out the front door. I had to go under the water and actually swim under the water. My head kept hitting the porch until I popped out. They had, like, white caps. It was that wind. It was like 150 mile an hour gust. And I had my grandma's old car. It was pinned right up in front of the roof, and I grabbed onto the back handle. And I just held there. I held there for like 15 minutes waiting because I thought they were coming behind me. So maybe I thought they got back to the attic. And I pulled myself up to the trunk of the car. And all I had on was I had a watch and a pair of shorts. I had a new shirt on. I couldn't get on the roof because it was kind of... Because I don't have a gut. I was kind of like that, and I had nothing to pull myself up on. So I jumped off the trunk, and I swam across the street. By the time I got across the street. The water was right above where the gutter would be. And then I thought about swimming back across the street, but I was afraid if I tried that the current would take me down the street. And I live on a cul-de-sac, you know, the street does, and I just jumped roof to roof all around the block. My dad, as I was going out, he told me this later, as I was going out the front door, they got stuck in the living room, and I guess they got separated by furniture or something, and he could hear her talking, and he just heard her say, because they all called me Bay. Even when I was a baby, short for baby. And she's like, make sure Bay gets out. My dad couldn't hear, and the last thing he heard her say was, make sure I get out. And then he said he just kept going in the water, and he said the last time he came up, he had enough room for his nose between him and his sheetrock and the ceiling. He said he took one last breath, and he said he went down. He said he thought that was it, but something told him to punch a hole through the ceiling. Punched a hole, and he stuck his face in it, and he started peeling sheetrock way back to the attic. And he got into the attic, and the dog's up there. And as I got around the block, I got a house away, and he managed to make a little hole in it and stick some of his body out, his head and part of his shoulders, and he was yelling for me, and I guess he thought I was still in the house because he didn't see me, but it was so loud with the wind I was yelling at him, and finally he heard me and he looked, and he thought my mom was with me, and she got out, and I thought my mom was with him in the attic. And I pretty much just sat there for about, I want to say a good 3 hours, because I didn't really care at that point. They had a lot of snakes on the roof, all kind of rats. I pretty much sat there in 150 mile an hour winds with things blowing past me. Just sat one roof over. My dad was in the attic with the dogs. And a boat eventually picked us up and went to Shelman High School. It's down Judge Perez. And they wound up fitting us on a helicopter that left about 7:30 in the morning Friday, and they flew us to Lafayette. And then somebody from Lafayette drove me and my dad to my brother's house in Baton Rouge to the doorstep. I just made 21 in January. Scott, Daddy's gonna be 57 or 58? 58.
His anniversary was,
His wedding anniversary. His mom and dad's wedding anniversary was Wednesday. He says he has bad nights every now and then. He came to Baton Rouge, went out to eat a couple of weeks ago. He kind of got me. I didn't cry, but I was getting tear at the table. He's like, yeah, I still tell her hello every morning, because we kept some of our ashes. He's like, I still tell her hello every morning. I started crying at the table. I was like, oh, I didn't know what to say. But honestly, I think if I would have left, I think he would have died with her. I think he would have just kept going back in the water to try to get her, and he would have drowned too. So maybe it's a blessing that I stayed, and if I didn't, I would have lost both of them. It's hard to move on, but you got to do it. I mean, that's what my mom always said. Because I always used to put her socks on. She used to have a blood pressure problem with her feet and that. She used to put her socks on. She always tell me, when I'm gone, you remember putting my socks on? She had fungus on her toenails. She had real thick toenails. And the thing about it, because she was in the house. She died August 29th. And they didn't get out the house till I think, September 20th. The oil spill made them wait 8 extra days. So she was in the house 8 extra days because of the oil in the house. And they trying to settle with my dad. My dad is probably going to... It's not the fact that he's trying to get money, but it's just the fact they wouldn't let the recovery efforts go with the bodies to the house. But that's how we identified her. You could tell by her feet. And I thought of that. I was like, I used to put your socks on. And that's the only way we can identify you is by your feet. So it's been almost seven months now, but it's hard. Man, I signed up for the Army. And I swore on August 15th. And then I was set to leave on the 31st. I had everything, all my paperwork still, everything's together. I want to get back down to my weight. It's like about 210. My dad told me, we had a service two months ago at the funeral home. And he's like, you gotta buckle down and get back in shape so you can leave for the Army. He's like, it was her last wish. It was she told me before she... She's like, as long as I know all five of y'all can support yourselves, I can die happy.
In this last situation, a crib, a place that is supposed to symbolize safety, becomes a trap. I'm host LaQuaya Simmons, here with Amanda and Gabe, sharing with you the widest range of cribs that we could think of.
We got some good definitions out there.
It gives you a way to separate yourself from the elements.
It gives you control of your surroundings.
But at its most simplest, it's a place where you truly live.
So as a last question, what does that mean, to live? You know, a light and easy question here at the end.
For me, like, to live is to breathe, be able to eat, be able to move my limbs, and to be able to talk.
For me, to live is to only have restraints that you make for yourself. Like, not to have anyone confining you, but, you know, restraints on, like, yourself. Like, oh, I won't drink as much, or I won't, you know, do this. I'll save up enough money to, like, move into a house or something like that. And only those things. And to not have, like, you know, be locked up or anything like that. And that's living, is to kind of live by your own standards and have enough kind of wisdom in your life to know what restrictions you should have on yourself.
For me, living is all about being able to take in knowledge and learn, you know? Because, like, life is just a big old journey. And right when you think you know something, something will, like, come and, like, just throw all that away, you know? Yeah. It'll, like, the minute that you think you know everything, you don't know anything at all. So life for me is just being able to have knowledge and use it and just learn and just being able to give yourself space and opportunity to be able to learn and have knowledge. Well, we could talk all night. I don't know about you, but I got stuff to do.
Yeah, I'm off house arrest, so me too.
It is time to say goodbye. Farewell till next week.
Peace out.
This is Dominic Pardini, representing the Voice of Youth production staff. We'd like to say goodnight, thanks for listening. Voice of Youth would like to extend thanks to essay writers Jamie Moore and Ashley Bolden, especially Ashley for voicing the thought that most of us kids have at least once a day.
It's like, these should be my peaceful days, right? Wrong.
To realtor Carol Collins for her sensitivity.
Will it offend you if I say things about Latinos?
And to Crystal, who says stuff about Latinos all the time.
We are the loudest Mexican there, I know.
To Justin Iba for taking time out of his newfound freedom on the outs to talk about a sensitive subject.
I'm worried about it.
To Brown Student Radio for bringing us jaw-dropping audio like this.
She died August 29th, and they didn't get out the house till I think, September 20th.
To editor Katie Stolman for her spot-on definition of escrow.
It's like a magical time when all your hopes and dreams can come true or be dashed.
To director Tatiana Harrison for her cute little attempts to sound young.
But the blingy now basically means that you won't have this ability in the future, right?
To production staff Marina Shapiro, Lucas Reichmuth, Rena Wang, and Tom Walters. And to our fabulous listeners for writing in with their thoughts and praise. Join this growing group of listeners writing in. Email voy@krcb.org. That's voy@krcb.org. Or call 707-584-2017. That is 707-584-2017. We're hoping to hear from you. This is Voice of Youth signing off. Peace out. Keep it real. Oh, yeah, and happy birthday to me.
I was kind of going to say the same thing, but I wasn't sure if it was that appropriate, but geez, you just put it out there, huh?